Hello, poopies. It's James here. Story time with Dutch. I only said that just to.
You stole my line.
I know I stole your line. I'm sorry, man. Fan questions Tuesday. We're going to do the plugs really quickly. We've got books. We've got Dutch has got a diploma. Dirty Dutch Mantel with 2Ls at gmail.com to get signed merchandise. Make the request to the man himself. There are t-shirts out that I'm sure a little logo will come up with. I've got Shane Douglas's new podcast, Franchise University, with Shane Douglas every single Tuesday, the same day that this podcast comes out. And if you want your question read, as so many of you have done, dozens and dozens and dozens do every single week, email me at questionsfordutch@gmail.com. And the best ones get picked and make it into the script, and allowing for time, they will get read out to Dirty Dutch Mantel himself. Yes, Dutch.
And we're very close to getting 100,000 subscribers on the Storytime with Dutch podcast. Mm-hmm. And that's on all platforms, right?
No. These subscribes are just for YouTube.
Oh, just for YouTube. Mm. Okay. Where's the Spotify come in? Are we just on Spotify?
Yeah. It's just one of those podcast distributors like iTunes or, well, what's formerly Stitcher.
So this is just for YouTube?
Just for YouTube.
Okay, go to YouTube, folks. We would like to hit 100,000. I would just like to be able to say that we have 100,000 subscribers. Mm. That's a lot of subscribers. That's James.
Rarefied air.
To hear this stuff we put out every week, but it's entertaining as hell. It entertains me.
Were you going to denigrate our stuff? Because you nearly said shit.
Our stuff is great stuff. I mean, you can listen to it, and it's not going to bog you down. It's not heavy stuff. It's stuff that you can listen to, enjoy, and go tell somebody that something we said, like, hey, did you know, blah, 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 which leads me to my next subject. You're being educated here at the University of Dutch. No student loan accepted. You either take it in and learn from it, and to prove that you've learned from it, you can get an official University of Dutch diploma from me that's signed by Dirty Dutch Mantel and Zeb Coulter with a seal, a gold seal on it. And it comes in a regular, you know, carrying, not a case, but a pamphlet that's very nice. And you can put it on your wall. And I've said this before, where somebody comes in and wants to talk about wrestling, you say, where do you have your diploma from? And you can proudly say, I graduated from the University of Dutch. Here's my diploma. What are they going to say then? Nothing. Mm-hmm. You've shut them up. So, but anyway, write me Dirty Dutch Mantel, 2Ls, gmail.com, and I'll get back to you.
And you said before, hey, you know, we have fun on this podcast. There's good information. There's fun stories and everything like that. And if you don't believe us, go and listen to some of the other podcasts out there. They're crap. They're awful. We're really good. And to prove
Are they bad?
Oh, some of them absolutely stink. But to prove it to you just once again.
Who are we better than? I want to know so I can rub it in.
Ooh, in what sense? Just quality-wise? Everybody.
Yeah.
We're better than everybody. I'm not going to name any names, but I don't know.
But you know, I have a lot of truck drivers. Now, I don't know how they watch this. I guess they just listen to it.
Yeah.
But they say it really makes the trip go by. Because I've said before, when you get in the car to make a trip with somebody, if they're a good talker and an interesting talker and talking about something that interests you, the trip flies by. And that's why wrestlers are such good talkers, because they've made so many long trips. Believe me, I think the longest trip I ever made, you never asked me this, what's the longest trip I ever made? I think it was 500 one way. It was like 550 miles. Or maybe it was, I'll break it down so I'm not lying, 500 miles from some town in like northern Oklahoma back to Louisiana, and on a two-lane highway years ago. And I noticed one thing about the highways in Louisiana, all the cars at night had one headlight. I don't know, not all of them, but most of them, they had one headlight. And I don't know why. I guess all the rocks they kick up or whatever. But a lot of cars just had one headlight. I noticed that. So continue with our podcast.
I am going to pick the trip this time. And this won't make any... Well, you nearly choked on your coffee then when I said that.
Yeah, I said, I want you to pick the trip.
Yeah, well...
My God, what are you going
to
pick?
No, well, we need 1 hour or slightly under. So I'm going to say Stockport to Blackpool. So...
Where? Oh, you picking the trip.
South Manchester to Blackpool, essentially. So that's about an hour. So we can
an
do
an hour?
Oh, I mean, the way I drive is about 30 minutes, but...
You know how long a 500-mile trip is at night?
Eight.
Probably more. Probably, it's two-lane highway. More like a nine and a half. Because you can't do 70 miles an hour on those back roads at night. You just can't. I got stopped one time on a back road. I think it's either in South Carolina or Louisiana. And my brother was with me. And he pulled me over right in the town square. And I'm trying to think, or it could have been I don't know. But the guy, he looked like just like the epitome of a Southern sheriff. Big belly, got out, put his trooper hat on. Walked up there, he said, boy, you're speeding through our town. I said, well, I was only doing 30. He said, speed limit's 20, boy. He cut me off real quick. I says, well, I'm sorry. He didn't even ask to see my license. He says, well, got two ways about this. He said, I got to fine you or you got to go to jail. I said, well, what's the fine? He says, $30 or something like that. And I went, I think it was 30. And I says, I only got 20. He says, well, damn, boy, ask your buddy over there if he's got any money. So he said, my brother said, I got $5. I said, he's got $5. He said, well, damn. He said something like broke ass bastard or something. I said, I only got 25. He said, all right, boy, give it here. He took the money, put it in his hand, put it in his pocket, and says, now, slow down. You hear? You hear? I mean, like, do you hear me? Yeah, we hear you. And I drove off from that town square late at night. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning. Nobody moving. He scared the hell out of me. I could just see myself going into that jail. So, So we paid him and he never wrote nothing down on any paper, never wrote me a ticket or nothing. He just took the money and left.
I'm imagining J.W.
Pepper. I think they call that corruption. Good way.
J.W. Pepper. You know who I mean by that, don't you?
No.
Well, you've never seen Live and Let Die?
Live and what?
Live and Let Die. You know, Roger Moore, James Bond.
Oh, I did see that.
Yeah. Anyway, we shall now ask our first question. And the first question asker is Perry Horton. Could you discuss with Dutch about the Dirty White Boy? His early career, he tagged with Len Denton, both as Dirty White Boys, and a mass team called the Grapplers. Then they split up and Tony Anthony just became Dirty White Boy. He did use his then-wife Kim as his valet, known as Dirty White Girl, off and on. So, memories of Dirty White Boy.
Well, I met him in Memphis, the Dirty White Boys. It was Len Denton and Tony Anthony. Good team. Very good team. Len Denton had been used to working under the hood. Tony hadn't. So, but when I met him, they were a good team. They didn't stay around long. But then I think he went back to Oregon or wherever he was based out of. He went back and Dirty White Boy stayed around. Then I ran into him again. He went to WWF and I forgot what they called him there.
T.L. Hopper.
Oh, my God. That was a horrible gimmick. And, you know, you talk about people that are racist. Well, back in those days, they weren't so much racist as they were geographically racist.
Xenophobic. Because
that's exactly. If you were down south, it was like a real southern accent, and like you were inbred. And I always took offense to that, but the real southern people didn't have any organizations like black people did to say something about it. So we just had to suffer through it. So he was like, he wore overalls and jeans and, you know, picked eggs in the morning and chickens and slopped the hogs and milked the cows and talked. It was just crazy. But anyway, he didn't last long there. I remember they had brought a bunch of different gimmicks in. He was one of them. I can't remember another one they brought in.
Ooh, I know one. Tracy Smothers they brought in briefly. He was Freddie Joe Floyd, which was a rip on the Briscoes' real names.
Yeah, and that's another takeoff of Southern lifestyle. Mm. But I didn't much like that. They didn't stay around that long. But I'm going to tell you about this match I had with Tracy Smothers. I'm a manager. I'm not supposed to be a wrestler. So I had a match with Tracy Smothers on TV. And Vince was the announcer. And I went to the ring by myself without Bradshaw with me. And I was going to take home. And something I had said about him that he had taken offense to, and he wants to meet me in the ring. And I came up with this finish that got over I thought it was good. But I lost. It was supposed to be a one-fall match. I lost the first fall in about 6 seconds. I attacked him, turned around to go to the crowd, turned around, he small packaged me, 1, 2, 3. Oh, the people went nuts because I'd done a promo on them to start the match. So I cried and said, "You son of a bitch, you can't do that again. I wasn't ready. That don't count." You know, Vince is going nuts. Said, what is this? You know, hopscotch. So I get him back in the ring. I do it again. He takes another. He beats me again. This time in like 15 seconds. Now it's two right in a row. And then I said, no, something's wrong. The bellkeeper don't like me. Everybody was always against me. And I got him in there for the third fall. He's about ready to beat me the third time. And then, of course, Bradshaw comes in. We beat the crap out of him and somebody makes a save. But we end up going in this segment about, I don't know, 6 minutes. But it was 6 minutes to where you couldn't call what was going to happen. And I've never seen another finish like it. I made it up, not on the spot, but I made it up in the back. Because I made it up is I was tired. I didn't want to do it. And I've done it another time with Scott Hall. Because first time I met Scott Hall, he was messed up to protect myself. But anyway, that's where I met Tony. But Dirty White Boy, good talent. And he finally went to Smoky Mountain, where I think he found the most success because he's from up in that area. And the people believed in him, and he drew some money at Smoky Mountain with Cornette.
Where does the plumber character rank in the all-time worst gimmicks ever given in a major promotion?
It's edging its way toward not the bottom, but it's in the lower. It's in the lower third of those, of lower 25%.
Next question. Eddie has asked, you once said that Yokozuna's always looked after his victims of his bonsai drop finisher. Well, here's proof otherwise. 1 second. Okay. I can't watch this.
You can't watch it?
Oh, I just hate it. I hate it because I know it's coming. So, he didn't really look after him that much, and then I think he does it again. Let's just have a look.
You got another one?
The same match. With Ray Rougeau, in fact, who you mentioned last week. So. He bounces off the dude. So,
it ain't that bad.
What? Oh, no. That's awful.
Hey, if he really wanted to kill the guy, he wouldn't have caught himself with his feet. He catches himself with his feet a little bit. But it's hard to, catch 500 pounds. I'm agreeing to that. But most of the time, he turned loose the top rope, didn't he? Did he turn it loose?
Turn it loose? You mean let go of the top rope?
I mean, when he go, I don't know. I always thought he held the top rope. But
well, normally he did. That's the thing. But occasionally in the jobber matches, especially in his first year in the business, he would just sit on dudes occasionally. But whenever someone established, he would always hold onto the top rope and gently lower himself, well, comparatively gently lower himself down.
Mm-hmm. Well, to my knowledge, he always kind of took care of these guys. These guys weren't carried out of the ring or anything. I mean, you could probably, it's just a lot of weight on you at one time. Which, if you wanted to let go of Olive, yeah, he could really hurt you. He could really, but for the most part, I think he took care of his opponents. Because if word got around that he was killing people, they would tell him to stop doing it if enough guys complained. Or if somebody had to go to the hospital because of that drop, they would stop it because they were afraid of a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And that's what they didn't want. Not only did they not want the lawsuit for one reason, they wanted it for two reasons. The first reason is going to cost them a lot of money just to fight it. And the second reason is, you know, it would reveal what happens behind the scenes. Mm. The guy, if they had a trial, he would get up and he said, he promised me he wouldn't hurt me. And are you trying to hurt each other, sir, out there all the time? He said, no, it's not. It's fake. That's what they didn't want to get out, even though it was generally considered under those terms. They didn't want it broadcast to the nation and to the world that it was set up and it wasn't real like we said it was, or we tried to pretend it was.
To add on to that, someone, I believe we talked about it whenever we talked about it, someone made a comment on one of the videos saying that some guy claimed he knew one of these job guys who would just be brought in for TV.
Yeah.
And he said he got hurt so bad that he was messed up for a very, very long time, but he never told the company because he was worried that they wouldn't book him again.
Well, I think a lot of guys have been hurt and didn't tell the company for that very reason, because there was only one national promotion, and I guarantee you, they had plans to be hired or to get hired by WWE to be a regular talent. Mm-hmm. And if you stirred up the waves, of course, that would disqualify you from getting a job. You know, nobody would want to mess with you. So, and if you're messed up. But when he finally realized that he wasn't going to get a job, I wonder, could he go back and sue if he had the doctor records and all that? Or is it too late? I'm sure it's too late, but
it would be too late now, surely. But it's a good question. You never know. Well, I mean, who are you going to sue? Because Yoko died 20-odd years ago, but maybe the company. I don't know. We shall move on.
No, they would have sued. They would have sued the company because they were in charge.
But you know these lawsuits. They'll sue the company. They'll sue Vince personally. They'll sue Yokozuna and Mr. Fuji on the outside and the referee in the front row. You know, they'll like Raka Khan. They'll put thousand people on the. Named
Raka Khan. You like that name, don't you?
I know, I like that name.
We're
going to be talking.
How many people did she sue?
1,000.
1,000 people.
And you weren't one of them.
I wasn't one of them. No.
To imagine feeling left out like that. I don't know. We're going to move on with that. And there's actually two people with two very similar questions. I thought I'd read them to you at the same time. Mark Counterman has asked, I've heard over the years about wrestlers that had issues with doing their laundry regularly. Brackets Vader. So my question is, who had the worst hygiene that Dutch had to work with or heard stories about? And Will Huff from Richmond, Kentucky says, love the podcast. I'll listen to it as soon as I get home from work. My question is, back in the 70s and 80s, how often did Dutch and other wrestlers that he knew of get to wash their wrestling tights throughout the week being on the road? Were there some wrestlers that you could tell never washed them and made it hard to work with because they smelled so bad? So stinky wrestlers and laundry and hygiene.
Oh, very, very important. Vader stunk to high heaven. What stunk, not what necessarily him so much, but was his outfit. Because he didn't wash it out. Even when I was on the road and say it was a hot, steamy night and your outfit was, soaked with sweat and perspiration, you had to wash it out. Because if you didn't, you couldn't even get in it yourself. Because you can't hang it up in an air-conditioned room. It's going to dry a little bit, but it's not going to dry completely. So I would wash my stuff out on the road if I didn't have a chance to do it anywhere else. And then I would dry it, hang it up, it would dry somewhat. And then, I'd just leave it out to match time so it would dry up. If you lock up with a guy and he went, oh, my God. I've done that before. And not only some of these guys, they had a stinky body. That was horrible. So, but we would tell them, take a shower, you nasty bastard. We were as nice with it as we could be. But when enough guys said, you need to take a shower, we would a dressing room shame them enough to where they would go and take a shower and start cleaning their stuff up. And what you had to watch for was like knee pads. They take longer to dry. You had to wash your knee pads out too. Because when you start sweating on these big hot summer nights down south, open air building, not all these buildings were air conditioned, folks. We had a lot of open air. So if it's 90 degrees outside, it's about 100 inside the building. So, and when the people are sitting out there wiping sweat off, you know what you're going to be doing. You're going to be wiping it too.
How many outfits did you take with you on a particular loop? So a week's worth.
I'll take two. I would take two because not necessarily the cleaning. I would take two in case the other one got torn. See, if I only had one got torn, I didn't have nothing to wear. I'd have to wear blue jeans in there. And that wouldn't have, it would have worked because I didn't have anything else. But I would take two. I only wore three basic colors. I wore black or blue or red, mostly blue, red and black. So that's what I ended up taking.
And if we're going to have a hall of shame of smelliest wrestlers, Vader apparently is going to be one of them. Who makes it into that list?
Well, I can't remember, but there was a few, but not too bad. I think most of them that I ran across, I didn't run across them but one time. Then they were shamed into taking a shower. So if somebody did stink, I think somebody else would start shaming them and they would take a shower before I got to them farther on down the loop.
Next question. Eric asks, to your knowledge over the years, how close was Paul Heyman to either working for or even buying TNA or Impact at various points?
I call that bullshit.
You think?
I do. Buying TNA. Thought he had WECW. What you want to do another one for? I don't know. I never heard that. I've heard his name mentioned, but I heard his name mentioned in taking over the book. Okay, take it over, Paul. See what you can do with it. I'm not against that. I'm really not. But him buying TNA, they were trying to sell it. And if he wanted to buy it, if any figure was within his reach, I think he would have bought it. I don't know what it cost him to start TNA. See, TNA, this is how it started. They had the first pay-per-view, and I've told you this story before. I just didn't tell you the second half of it. They thought they had something like 80,000 buys, which would have been a hell of a payday. They were ecstatic. Like 2 days later, when the guy they had hired to handle the pay-per-view business, and he told them, it's looking like 80,000 buys, guys. And they went, damn, at $30 or $40 a buy?
No, it was only 10. It was the weekly.
Oh, 10. Well, anyway, yeah. that was 800,000. You told me that before.
Yeah.
Right. But I had heard 30,000 too, and 40,000, but I've heard that. And then they found out later, no, nowhere close to that, something like 8,000 or 7,000, maybe a lot lower than what they'd anticipated. So, and I'd worked for them a while. Then after I worked the first pay-per-view, they were supposed to do one every 2 weeks. And I got a call from Jeff Jarrett, and he said, well, he didn't exactly spell it out. He said, we've had some difficulty here, and I can't bring you in on any more of the tapings. And I said, that's okay. I had a job anyway. So, and then I kept hearing from there that they were running into money problems. And then he went to talk to Dixie Carter, Jeff did. And as it comes out, Jeff had known Dixie years before, somehow. So he went to talk to her and told her the potential, but they needed financial backing. And she listened to it. And she says, you know, my dad may be interested in, you know, backing that, financially backing that idea of the pay-per-view company, the second one. And she says, meet me at the airport, a private airport, in the morning, and we'll fly to Dallas. That's where her dad was. And they flew to Dallas, and they had a meeting, and they emerged from the meeting with the Carters. I forgot the name of their company.
Panda Energy.
With Panda Energy owning majority interests, and I forgot what Jeff and Jerry, they had financed it earlier. I think they went down to like 15% or 10% or something, but at least they had a backer and a financial person to put up the money. And then they kind of, from going out of business, they went back into business just with different partners. So, and that changed, I think, within 3 months of starting, or I don't know. I can't remember.
Carry on.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna
give me the dates.
No. I was actually gonna skip ahead quite a lot. Do you remember when TNA was partially bought out by USA Network or Spike? I'm sorry.
No, I don't remember that.
Maybe that was after you were there, but I believe Spike ended up having a percentage interest in the company at one point.
I don't recall it when I was there. I was there to 2003. No. I was there in 2009.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. No, you started in 2003 full time to 2009.
Yep. I don't remember Spike having any interest that they had bought in at the time. But the thing about Spike is we were told don't have any male touching a female. Nothing. And I said, well, damn. Judging what the WWF had done just a couple of years earlier, hell, they had guys power bombing women and everything else. They said, oh, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that at all. And I remember we had a girl in the ring. I think it was Karen Jarrett. And I said, you need to do something to her. Oh, God, no, you can't touch her. We'll get kicked off Spike. I went, wait a minute. All of a sudden, they're the arbiter of what we can do. And they were. They owned the network. I said, okay, we're not going to touch her. So, And then look at what they're going back to today. They're doing back not only male-female wrestling matches they had, but they have male-female now, like they have the shoot fighters doing it, male versus female. And they have wrestling matches, amateur matches, male versus female, which has me concerned, because if a male can wrestle a female, he ought to be able to be the women's champion most of the time, wouldn't you say?
Mm.
So why have a separate league?
Could be a Kaufman with the intergender champion. We could bring that back, maybe.
Now, Kaufman, he was years ahead of the curve. When he was the intergender champion, it was hilarious. And he would do it. He would do it like pro wrestling. He would do a stand-up comedy set and then ask any woman who wants to challenge him for his title, we could do it right there on the stage. Now, if I was at a comedy show, I don't know Andy Kaufman from Buckwheat or anything else, but he's going to have a wrestling match. I'd be interested in that. And when he came to Memphis with that, I was the biggest fan that I could be. And I wish I had talked to Andy more, but I think Andy was kind of shy. I mean, naturally shy. And we looked at him like a star, and he looked at us like stars. Hell, I didn't know that. But he was used to, of course, he had the Saturday Night Live thing, but I mean, taxi show. But he was used to working little comedy clubs of like 150 people, 200 at the max, little comedy club. But then he would come to Memphis and he'd see 10,000, 11,000 people sitting out there. And he was, if anybody ever loved the wrestling business, it was Andy Kaufman. And he would go out of the way to make sure people did not think it was scripted or manufactured. Even his match when they brought the gurney in for Kaufman, you know, he wouldn't get up. And they wanted to bring an ambulance in, it cost $300. And Lawler's even said, I'm not paying $300 for an ambulance. So Kaufman told the referee, Jerry Calhoun, tell him I'll pay for it. Then Lawler said, okay, if you'll pay for it, then yeah, bring it in. And it was a big, big deal. Because people in the building legitimately thought that Andy Kaufman, that Lawler put him in a hospital. And they thought, I wish the movie, what was the movie they made?
Man on the Moon.
Man, I wish it never come out. Because that smartened everybody up. That they had. But how can you smarten everybody else up when Kaufman was the only one who knew it was a work? Because he was the one who did it. He wasn't supposed to lay there. He just did. So, but whatever he did, he got famous for it. And I've said before, it became one of the top 100 moments on television, U.S. television.
Yeah, no, that was Jerry Lawler slapping Andy Kaufman on Letterman.
I meant to say that.
Before we jump off the original question, apparently with Paul Heyman, that it was all at one point maybe signed, sealed, and delivered for him to come on as the lead booker and sort of just almost like wipe the slate clean, except for Dixie Carter wanted basically final creative approval on everything.
What year was this?
Good question. I don't remember. I think it was a couple of times that Heyman was said that he may be coming in. And one of the times was that Dixie wanted...
We talk about guys working the dirt sheets. Heyman was the top one. Mm. And he worked it to his advantage, of course. I don't blame him. But if he can put that out there, that makes his worth somewhere else, say with Vince, his worth goes up. Somebody else wants him. So, and if he was going to be a booker, He could have been a booker in WWE, except, you know, one thing, he didn't really want it. He really didn't.
Well, he was at one point. He was head writer at one point, and then he got fired.
He got fired or he quit?
He got fired.
Well, okay, if he got fired, that meant that he wasn't up to the job.
No. He got fired because he was secretly tapping into other phone conversations because he was head writer for SmackDown. He was tapping into the private phone conversations on the Raw side so he could... Because basically they kept the Raw and SmackDown rosters separate, including the writing teams. So there was a bit of competition between them. So Heyman would tap in to their...
How do you mean tap in?
Conference calls. Basically, there's a code. They needed to like tap in a code on their phone, and that would be the password to get into the conference call.
And he's with Raw.
He's with SmackDown. He tapped into the Raw side.
He's SmackDown.
Constantly. And then Stephanie McMahon
found out.
Okay, and
what would he do? What would he do?
Well, he would find
out. What would he do with that information?
Well, I think he'd basically just write and book something in response
ahead
to
of
it.
Them.
Ahead of them, ahead basically, yes. Yeah, so that SmackDown seemed to be the
well. What's the old saying? All fair is love and war.
Oh yeah, especially and when they're the same company. For goodness sake, I don't see the problem.
Well, again, I would say that's a little bit of cheating. I would say so. And what he would do, he'd hear what they're going to do, and he'd beat them to the punch or try to. How long was he there as the booker?
He was a writer for a good couple of years, probably 2004, 2005. Then he disappeared for a few years after firing. Then he came back with probably Brock Lesnar, I think. We're going to move on. Zweller has said, hey, James and Dutch, I couldn't even say that bit. Love the podcast. I never miss an episode. I was curious about what was Dutch's role in creating the Aces and Eights and the Main Event Mafia. Now, we already know that Aces and Eights was long since after you left. But the Main Event Mafia was Kurt Angle, Sting, Scott Steiner, Booker T, and Charmel at the time. So the first version of the Main Event Mafia, give us all you know on it.
It was in my TNA days, right?
Oh, yeah. 2008.
This may have been me hiding out in the catering department days because I didn't have a lot to do with it. I think we had all these guys that were available. So, the consensus among the creative team when they found me was, I'm all for it. You handle it, and I'll tell you if I like it or not. And they put them together, and they were pretty good. And there was a lot of internal problems you could draw from, and. But I didn't have a lot of input in that. I think this was when I was, what year was this?
2008. I forgot to mention Kevin Nash as well in that group.
I was working with the girls at the time with the Knockouts at that time. So my time was taken up with them more or less. So, but I will say that I think the girls were more successful than the Main Event Mafia. Mm. And who was in that? Kevin Nash.
Yeah, Kevin Nash, Kurt Angle, Sting, Scott Steiner, Booker T, and Charmel. I mean, apart from Kurt Angle, it was just like a rerun of WCW's Millionaires Club in 2000. So it was a bit of a rehash in that sense, apart from Charmel.
And who broke off from that? Who was the first one to break off? Sting?
God knows. I don't know.
I don't know either. I read what you sent me. I couldn't read it all. Then we went to a second version. About 4 years later, why would you go to a second version when the first version didn't do that much? I mean, I don't get it. So I'm not going to talk about something I know very little about, and I know very little about the Main Event Mafia.
Then we shall
good talent, great talent, though.
Yeah, but why would you pull your talent, like all your talent, into one group? It just like you didn't pass the vision test for me. It's like why are these six people all hanging out together? It didn't. You know, like this D-Generation X of the Four Horsemen, you look at them and you think, well, how could they have not been together sooner? It works. Then the Main Event Mafia is just like, well, we've just shoved these
main event
guys
in. You're
not supposed
to. Hey, don't try to put sense to this.
I know.
I mean, you're a wrestling fan. I know you don't forget, remember, those guys hated each other 6 months earlier.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
And all of a sudden, they make amends. And of course, you could explain that because this is to the mutual benefit of everybody. So they joined in. And what was everybody waiting for? For them to break up. That's the first thing I was waiting for. So Jenna Marasco was in there or no?
No, Sharmell. I think Jenna. Oh, Jenna Marasco may have been a manager for someone.
Oh, that's. I've talked about
yeah,
her.
We've talked about it. We're going to move on because we're fumbling through this one. Next question is Max Harris. He's asked us, almost specifically you, to critique this promo William Regal did before wrestling Cesaro prior to Regal's last ever televised match before retiring for good. So 1 minute. Okay, so here it is.
I'm in the late autumn of my 30-year career, and recently I've been pondering over the legacy of William Regal. What's it all been about? I'm a vicious and sadistic and spiteful fighter. I've been a unique entertainer. I never achieved the one thing that I coveted the most, and that was to become the world heavyweight champion. But that's my fault, because I have a wonderful knack of getting myself into a lot of trouble. But to the people who really know, I've always been a second-to-none world-class technical wrestler. That was until Antonio Cesaro came along. Because I know, even on my best day, he's 10 times the man and the wrestler that I've ever been. And he knows that. And that's what this is really all about. He has an intense desire to prove it. And I truly commend him for it. I'm going into this match knowing that the only chance I've got of surviving, let alone winning, is a miracle. And that's not coming to a faithless old villain like myself. I'm not worried or scared of my plight. In fact, I'm relishing the thought. I am going to compete with every drop of violent venom that I've got left. And if this is the end, well, I honestly can't think of a more noble way to go than being beaten by the ultimate competitor.
There we go. I've never seen that before.
The interview was great. The interview was good. But interviews are supposed to get you interested in a match. This gets me, while it was a great promo, the way it was delivered, his words, everything. Great, great promo. But it got me disinterested in the match. Great interview, but I think it turns fans off the product.
But basically, this was Regal's retirement match and his last flourish, and I think he just wanted to make Cesaro look as good as possible.
So he's leaving after this match.
Yeah.
But I didn't get that from that. Did he say I'm leaving after this match?
No.
Did he say it's my retirement match?
No.
Well, now I'm misled. Now I'm misinformed or disinformed. But in either case, I'm not interested in really seeing it because nothing's on the line. He's never made the championship. I got that. That's what I thought he was going for. So I don't know. Good interview, but and great delivery, but I don't think they got results from that.
I think probably with if we were watching TV at the time, we may have had more of an inkling of what was going on there. But has there ever been an English wrestler who did a good interview aside from Regal?
Was there ever an English wrestler who what?
Who could cut a good promo? Because all I'm thinking of is they were all awful. Bulldogs. Don't think Will Ospreay's very good.
I thought some of the English guys were good. But Regal is in a class by himself. He really, to American fans, he is like the name Regal. He is the Regal. He does a great, great interview. Name another English wrestler. Billy Robinson, could he do an interview?
I don't think so, no.
Les Thornton, could he do one?
Never heard a Les Thornton interview.
What?
Unless they did it in America, then there's pretty much no... There are no promo people, really, in England.
Like Tony long Charles.
Ones. Like long Tony ones Char- like that.
Tony Charles.
I couldn't tell you.
What about Regal's buddy? What was his name?
Taylor.
From England is...
Dave Taylor.
Taylor. Could he do one?
Not really, I don't think.
Really?
I don't think so, no.
So he was the best one of all of them?
Yeah, I think so, pretty much. Of all the English wrestlers, he's probably the best one. Like longer style interviews, because I'm sure there are loads of people, like Mick McManus or something, say, don't touch my ears or something, you know.
Well, I just heard them in the dressing room, and I thought they were great, because they're not, nothing's expected out of them, but a good story, a good delivery. And they always talk great in the dressing room. That's where I heard them.
Justin from Plano, Texas. On Halloween 1981, Dutch was in a feud with Troy Dream Machine Graham and got his back spray painted yellow. My question to Dutch is, how hard was it to get the yellow paint off his hairy back? Thanks.
I asked that question when they came up with that idea.
Did you? Really?
And they said, don't worry, it's some kind of special yellow paint that comes off with water. So I said, I don't know. Instead of going and testing it, I took their word at it. And while some of it did come off with water, it didn't all come out with water. So I still I still had on, what did they paint on my back? I forgot, a sea coward or something.
This fella says a yellow stripe.
Yeah, it's supposed to be.
Wasn't even a stripe.
Well, it was paint. It was, but not permanent paint. It was paint that, you know, you can wash it off with water. It mostly came out. Especially on the hair on my back. I was worried about it. And I thought, boy, I'd hate to make all these towns with big old yellow stripe down my back. And then, but I could tell people, oh, he did it at TV. Well, he didn't do it Saturday because it was a week late in some areas. Most of the areas it was in Louisville, Nashville, and Evansville, it was a week late. So if I showed up with a big yellow stripe, then they see it the next week how it got there. It confuses people. But I got in the shower. And yeah, it did come off, but it didn't totally come off till maybe I took another shower. Then it was gone. So, but if he puts it in all that hair, people said, "Oh, why the hell is he gonna?" I actually should have left it in there, but I didn't.
So you didn't have to break out the Nair this time.
No, I didn't have to break out the Nair.
Okay.
So.
Okay, we'll ask this one and probably one more, and then we'll shut it down. Chris from Cherokee County, Georgia. I was watching an episode of Down and Dirty with Dutch, where he interviews Jim Cornette, one of my personal favourite promos of all time. My question is, how on earth does Dutch manage to keep a straight face here? Is it pure professionalism and willpower? Let's watch this. Okay, here we go. It's pretty long, so we're gonna just do the very, very short version of this.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Down and Dirty with Dutch. I'm Dutch
Mantell,
and you're not. I am back here
somebody.
Today on this special segment in the dressing room area. I want to get Jim Cornette's comments on the upcoming match today between the Heavenly Bodies and Jim Cornette. Jim Cornette will be in the ring today against the Rock and Roll Express and Ronnie Garvin. Now, Jimmy, I know you're not in a very happy mood. We'd just like to get some of your comments for the fans at home.
Oh, I got comments, all right. I got comments. This is a con job. Pure and simple is exactly what it is. Everybody out there knows I don't belong in a professional wrestling ring. I'm not an athlete. I shouldn't be forced to wrestle. Sure, the Heavenly Bodies, they can take care of themselves, but now they got to worry about taking care of me too, and it's all a con job. It's so crystal clear. Because first the Rock and Roll Express comes up with this Four right. Faces of Fear challenge at Thanksgiving Thunder.
The foremost... So this is a very long promo, so we need to get to the point where this is the one where his nose starts bleeding, isn't it?
I don't know if it is or not. It's bleeding right there.
Lobby, the parking lot.
Oh, no, it's not there.
Concession stand, women's toilet.
Yeah, it's there. No.
When somebody's back hits a flat surface and it gets counted down for three, that's when the match is over with. Then Friday night, November 27th.
I'll skip ahead.
Fear.
It is bleeding now, isn't it?
Look at the referee for
now we have to look at blood.
Yes. No, that's not the... That's not the.
Such a shadow.
Qualification.
I don't think so.
To make it to his feet now. This death match, pure and simple, the rules.
No, that is blood, isn't it?
Don't count. When a guy gets pinned...
Okay, so how did you manage to keep your face straight while someone is actually leaking blood out of their face while they're...
Well, first of all, somebody leaking blood out of their nose is not really funny to me, so I wouldn't have laughed naturally. But Jimmy, remember I've said that Jimmy has high blood pressure. And when he gets worked up, his nose could start bleeding or he could get... You know, some other side effects from having high blood pressure.
Did that actually genuinely happen more than just in this promo? Or did you just involuntarily have an aneurysm while yelling at someone?
Oh, yeah. And that, when you sent me this, I looked at that promo and I said, I don't remember this promo being a 2 minute promo or a 3 minute. It's not. That whole promo from my intro to we end it, it's 6 minutes. Now, anybody who can carry a promo for six straight minutes and not repeat themselves and still be interesting would be Cornette. Very few people can do that. And Cornette, I know how he learned to do his promos. I think he used to drive or up and down the road. This is after he got into business, doing promos in the car just for himself. But before he even got into the wrestling business, he would do it at home to himself and record it. And he became a serious student of the wrestling profession, especially managing. And he accomplished what he set out to do. He was very good at promos. Great. And I think he's better at promos than he is on a play-by-play commentary because he gets the point across. And, you know, when you see Cornette talking on TV, if you don't know who he is, see, he immediately releases on you that you don't like this guy. That there's something about this guy that you want to see him get his comeuppance. And that's exactly the vibe he wants to give off. Because I've seen Cornette, I've seen fans attack him. Of course, I've seen that tennis racket come into use a lot of times. I've seen him, he's hit a couple of people, split some of them. So Cornette is, and how could I do it without laughing? Well, I've heard Cornette do those type interviews forever, so. But I admired that he could carry that interview all by himself. I don't think Stan said anything in that interview. I don't think Tom said anything. And all I said was the opening and the close. Back to you, Bob. And that was it. And he carried at least over 5 minutes and 45 seconds. He carried that interview.
I don't know if you've ever been asked this before, but obviously Jimmy's going to be very, very high on that list. But who are the best promos as far as long form monologues off the top of their head, as you said, not repeating, remaining entertaining, getting the pertinent information across and being a character? So Jimmy's definitely going to be one. Let's say 3 minutes plus of those kind of interviews.
Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
Roddy Piper. Heyman. He could do the long form. If I think a little more, or Skandor Akbar could talk. Gary Hart, very good talker. I'm trying to think a little farther, deeper. Bobby Shane was very good talking. But Bobby Shane, not necessarily the time, but the vibe that he gave off. He actually got his character over on his interviews more than than is working. And I'm trying to think of a few more.
Lola.
Right off the top. Or Jimmy Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Hart. And Lawler, he could keep talking and he'd be interesting, but he could do a good one too. Very good one. So in the history of the wrestling business, I would say there's probably five and certainly less than 10. You know, Captain Lou.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Lou could talk just anything. And as long as he got back to what he was talking about, and he'd still get over. He was entertaining. You didn't know what he was going to say. So that's my list right now.
That's a fine list as well. We'll either end with this one or the next question, depending on whether you've got an answer for this next question I'm going to ask you. David from Omaha, Nebraska. Hey, Dutch, did you ever have a match with Iceman King Parsons from WCCW while you and he were in the USWA?
Never had a match with him. He was a heel. I may have had a match, but I don't remember it being just a match. I think he had his partner with him. I had a partner. Never angled with him. Let me say that. Never. Nothing like that. So I can't say much about him.
No. Okay, then. Well, we'll end on this next question then. Stephen, hello. Dutch, I enjoy hearing your stories and insights. I was wondering what may have been if Harley Race had accompanied Vader when he left WCW for the WWF.
So Harley was with Vader,
mm-hmm,
in WCW?
Yeah, he was his manager for quite a
few
years.
And they left. Oh, he left. But the question is, why didn't Vince want him?
Well, Harley, I think, had more or less retired by this point. I think he was long gone by about, let's say, 94, rough idea. Mm-hmm. Vader went over in 96. Do you remember much of Harley as a manager at that time?
I think he was misused as a manager.
Yeah.
I really do. I think he degraded himself in the eyes of a lot of wrestling fans, because he was the NWA at one point. He wore it out there and he defended it and he was tough. But when he had to stand on the outside and watch another guy or another talent, I think the people, they didn't lose, not respect, but he went downhill in their opinion of him.
Like an aura kind of thing.
Yeah, because he had one about him, because he was a tough, tough son of a bitch. He really, really was. So Harley used to tell me about the times Harley drank like a fish. And he did something that I don't recommend doing. He drank while he drove. And he didn't drive 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. He drove flat out 100 miles an hour all day long. So, and he got stopped one time. And he said he wouldn't roll his window down. And I don't know what he was doing. He said he had some tobacco in the car. And he stuffed a bunch of tobacco in his mouth. I don't know if he chewed tobacco or not. He just had some. And he thought that it would maybe sober him up something. But it doesn't. But when he rolled the window down, and he said, I tried to talk as straight as I could, the cop recognized him. And he says, Harley Race. He said, yes, sir. Pleased to meet you. And stuck his hand out. The cop shook his hand. The cop is a fan. Shook his hand. He said, Mr. Race, please, you need to slow down. And he said, I will. I swear I will. He let him go. But he could have went down the road from there and killed somebody or killed himself. So a lot of times wrestlers would get stopped on the highway, and the cop would be a wrestling fan and give him a break. I remember a cop giving me a break one time because I was speeding and recognized me. I mean, I wasn't doing 100 miles an hour. I was probably doing 5 miles over the limit. And he told me, he said, Dutch, you need to slow down. And I said, okay. But now they can't do that. When they pull somebody over, everything's recorded, the tag number, and he has to take who was driving and what he did. I'm going to tell you this one quick story. Me and, let me think who was with me, Undertaker and a guy named Action Jackson. We were coming back from Louisville one night late. Have I told it?
Were you all wearing do-rags?
Oh, and don't do rags.
Yes, you have.
I've told it.
You've told it. I'm sorry.
Well, but almost got us, so.
Hey, go on YouTube, everybody. Undertaker, Dutch Mantel on Undertaker nearly getting arrested or pulled over. Search for that. It will come up, I promise you. But it's a great story. For now, Dutch, I think on the doctor's couch or the psychiatrist's couch, we have reached the end of our time. So you can catch us again. I sort of said that like we're about to explode.
You can cry if you want to. So
someone did cry. We got complaints because like the last podcast, Tuesday one, was like 50 minutes rather than an hour. It's like, crikey. People can't get enough.
What, did they say it was too short?
Yes, people were saying it was too short. In fact, actually, I'm going to advance this to you right now on the podcast because I want to see what people, especially the people who've watched all the way to the end or listened all the way to the end, think. I mentioned this to you. And we've been talking about doing a live streaming thing on YouTube at some point.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
Yeah. I've suggested, why don't we watch Survivor Series? So it's a big enough event, people will be interested, and, you know, I will have to stay up very late to watch it. So, but I'll do it once, and we'll see how it works out. Is that something you'd be interested in? And more importantly, is that something everybody watching would be interested in? Because we can do a live stream. You can chat to us live. We can react to your questions. We can react to your comments. We can all talk about the same thing we're watching on the screen at the same time. So what do you think about that?
How long is that?
God, I don't know. We can just, when I get too tired or we get bored, we can just stop.
Well, you can't stop before the main event.
You'd be stunned what I can stop. It might sound a bit weird there. But yeah, no.
We could start somewhere in the middle. You know what I mean?
Okay.
We could give a time, but I don't want to, you know, people get tired of watching, but they may get tired of us talking. You know what I mean? So in case of that, we'll watch it to the main event and watch several matches up to there. I'd be down to do that. But
okay.
Watching that whole thing is it's a job. It's a chore. It's what do you call that?
A slog. I know what you mean.
Oh yeah, it's my job now. My other job is my other podcast is watching SmackDown, and I have a way to watch that now that I don't miss anything. I don't start watching to a quarter to nine. Then I watch the opening. Speed through the first match, see what happens, right? And then speed through the commercials, go to the second match, and follow that all the way through. And when I get back around to 9:30, where the show actually was, I'm into it about an hour by then. But I'm knowledgeable enough to talk about it and say what I thought about the show. But what I feel sorry for is guys that have to watch Raw for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. That's 3 hours too. And they watch it live. If I had to watch SmackDown live, I don't know if I could do that or not. I could, but.
Because normally I would have proposed Dynamite, but the problem is for me is that they don't show it live in this country. They show it a couple of days later. And at least
what
that's
about Collision? What about Collision?
They don't show that live here either. I could try and attempt to find a live stream somewhere and see if that would work. But they do show WWE here live. The only problem is that I don't have a TV in my office or my set-top box, my cable box to watch it. So in that case, if it was a pay-per-view, I could watch it on desktop here.
What about us just answering live questions? Just me and you answering live questions.
Yeah, we could do that.
Because then I could kind of get into it. And we could cut it off whenever we feel like it. First time somebody called us a lying SOB, we'd just say, okay, that's it. That's it. We're gone.
You've ruined it. We could call them out.
What you're asking is, would anybody be interested in that?
Yeah, pretty much. Anyway, so with different formats and stuff, if we're going to watch something live at the moment,
can we watch? Let me ask. Yeah. Can we watch your for fans only? I know you got one.
What? Only fans?
Fans only. You never heard of fans only?
I've heard of only fans. Is fans only like some other? It's only fans.
Yeah, only fans.
Yeah. Well, I'm not and doing it naked with you, Dutch. I mean, not for any amount of money.
Hey, that would be good. I mean, you could really attract a hell of a viewing audience.
Yeah, there would be very much a certain demographic who may be interested. Anyway, that's not happening.
What if a wrestler did that?
You.
Hey, they had a wrestler one time. What was his name? And they put him, he was on, I think he was on Raw or WWE. Then they found out he had a pornographic background.
Yeah, he was called Lars Sullivan. It wasn't Anderson. It was like Lars Sullivan or something like that.
Now, how do you know that?
Because it was a really funny story when it came out and I remembered it. I think he participated in homosexual pornography. He'd done the filming of. Anyway.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
No, genuinely.
This has got, you just got us an X rating right here.
Yeah, there, very good. Don't Google it, though, for God's sake. Right. Anyway, I am going because I'm hungry. So I'll see you all later. Let us know what you would like for us to do streaming on, whether it's fan questions or watching a TV show. But for now, we will read, I promise I'll read the comments this time. But to wrap up the show, Dutch, we the people.
We the people.
Poopy.